Brewer fans, welcome to the Beer District Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler. You can find me on Twitter at Tyler Kirth. You can follow all my writing on the internet, either at Reviewing the Brew or Wisconsin Sports Heroics. Co-host Josh Waldock is here with me here today. He's a contributor for Reviewing the Brew and is found on Twitter at Josh Waldock. We obviously have lots of exciting action to recap against the Cubs. In case you haven't picked up on it, my voice is like wants to be out of commission right now. So fair warning there. I sound like I'm going through puberty again. So this will be a very interesting podcast, but I'm glad we're able to get her on here, Josh.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Glad we got a nice sweep against the Cubs to talk about. And let's get it going.
Yeah, I mean, this is what, the first four-game sweep for the Brewers ever? And they did it in ass-whooping fashion. We outscored the Cubs 37-9 in the series. We've now won 9 in a row against them. We took the series lead all-time in the matchup, 198-197. And, you know, it was like a weird start. Monday obviously had the rain delay. Tuesday was a doubleheader with rain delay in there as well. Ashby started one of those games. And then the offense just explodes, really, Wednesday and Thursday. Obviously, some historic performances in there. But, you know, all things said, what kind of stood out to you the most regarding this series?
I mean, it was finally the culmination of the offense. I mean, granted, you know, you're looking at two teams, but anytime you can go off and score 27 runs over 18 innings and just deliver the death blow to Jacob Arrieta's career, it's a great series. I mean, clicking, the pitching was great, hitting was great, there were defense for the most part was great, and they expanded their lead on over the Reds thanks to the Braves. And I mean, really, you can say, like, going in, going to be up 8 games going into the weekend, can't complain about that.
Yeah, like we were talking about earlier before we started recording, you would have told us we had an 8-game lead in August. You know, that would have been hard to believe with how competitive we thought the NL Central would be. And, I mean, really still could be. The Reds are hanging around in there. But I like that phrase you used, death blow. Obviously, Jake Arrieta, he was designated for assignment after that outing, I believe, there from the Cubs. So really, literally death blow. And I know a lot of people are kind of bringing up the fact that maybe the Brewers are responsible for this current rebuild that the Cubs are in. I don't know how much you're looking into that, but if you think back to like the early series in June, it would have been, you know, the Cubs were just kind of hanging around 500. They weren't sure if they were contenders or going to be buyers or sellers. The Brewers were looking like buyers, and then we went out and swept them. In that final game, we went down 7-0 and then scored 15 unanswered runs. I don't know. What do you think? Are we responsible for this?
I think definitely could make an argument. I mean, 2016, they win the World Series, obviously. 2017, they lose to the Dodgers, NLCS. 2018, they lose 160, game 163 in Wrigley, and then turn around next day, lose to Colorado. I think that really you could make a strong case. 2019, missed the playoffs entirely. 2020, won the division, got swept by the Marlins. I mean, obviously, there are more factors than just the Brewers in those, but I think you definitely can make that the Brewers' ascension has kind of really stopped the Cubs from developing into anything more than a, you know, flash in the pan almost.
Yeah, there's lots of factors, like you said. I almost forgot about that when we won 163, they went out and lost right away to the Rockies. So that's a good point there to point out as well. You know, obviously the Cubs did a really good job of kind of putting it all together at first. I mean, you think about it, like Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, they all, you know, Theo Epstein kind of found all those guys and brought in some pitching and they established a really good team. And it's kind of weird. You think about it, like the Brewers might be similar in a way. Like we have all three of our starting pitchers kind of hitting their stride at this point. They don't cost a whole lot of money. We obviously brought in the MVP and Yelich. But I think long-term, like, we're set up for more success. We're not going to go through a big rebuild like the Cubs are right now, just the way David Stearns has constructed everything.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at what the Cubs did. I mean, they just decimated their system in 2016 to get Chapman, and then they traded Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease over to the White Sox in 2017 for Jose Quintana. they did do some replenishing this off. I mean, this at the deadline, but yeah, they definitely went all in while the Brewers have, I think, held on to their prospects more tightly to the chest. I mean, you don't see any. I guess Grisham is probably the highest impact player traded away, but Luis Urias is putting together a season where it was kind of a challenge trade, where it was, hey, we have two young guys, we're going to places and see what happens.
Yeah, no kidding. And I mean, we always talk about, oh, the Brewers lost that trade, but I don't know. Luis Urias is certainly making it look a lot closer. Obviously, Zach Davies doesn't play for the Padres anymore, and Eric Lauer was playing pretty good before he went on the COVID IL there. So, you know, we always jump to conclusions, I think, really soon, and I think that one's still kind of playing out, but it's definitely looking a lot more in the Brewers' favor. Also, like, offense is looking in the Brewers' favor a lot more as well. Obviously, this was against, you know, the Cubs pitching staff, which isn't the greatest, but we got to Kyle Hendricks in the finale. He got rough, what, 9 earned runs, I think it was.
Yeah, it was crazy because it seems like Hendricks, whenever the Brewers hit him, it's weak contact that they're lucky to scratch across 2 or 3. This time, they had no issue providing Brandon Woodruff with the run support.
Yeah, and then Brandon Woodruff can't even get a win because he only goes 3 innings in that game. That's so unfortunate.
Yeah, he, you know, the offense finally positioned where he can just coast to a win, and the Cubs did a great job of drawing out at-bats against him. I mean, he was, what, pitches through 3, which is not a – I mean, they did a great job, and then the bullpen came in, though, and essentially shut the door on that, which was good.
Yeah, no kidding, no kidding. Yeah, bullpen's starting to get a little bit back intact. Obviously, we got Josh Hader back, Hunter Strickland's back. So starting to get some of those guys back, and that's looking good here as well. You know, I guess, you know, the last thing, like, kind of thinking with how well the offense played here, obviously it's easy to, like, all the Andy Haynes critics have gone pretty quiet when you put up 37 runs in a series. I don't know where you stood on all that and how much a hitting coach like that plays a factor. But, you know, things are pretty quiet right now in the hating crowd.
I think that it's easy to blame on a coach when things aren't going. It's easy to say, oh, well, the offense was struggling early on. It's Andy Haynes' fault. And, oh, it's easy to say, oh, well, the offense is doing great. Andy Haynes is the best of all time, which I know Dario Melendez was over the last couple of days. But, I mean, looking at the Brewers have had a below-average offense for the past 3 seasons under Haynes. Right now, I mean, they're sitting at a 93 WRC+. They are, at, for the season, 106 WRC+ in the second half, which is, you know, trending upwards. But I think ultimately any real impact that's happening isn't coming from Andy Haynes. I think it comes from or offensive struggles don't come from him. I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. is the worst qualified hitters in baseball. Christian Yelich just hasn't been able to get it going. Keston Hira looks lost up there. But then the guys who he was doing work with in the offseason, like Garcia, Urias, I mean, those guys are doing well. So really, it's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, if they bring him back next year, I'll be happy. If they go in a different direction, probably be indifferent. I mean, I guess that's kind of a roundabout way of saying I think that role in the success and or failures of the team is, I think, greatly exaggerated, and it's easy to become kind of a target of fan ire.
Oh, gosh, yeah, for sure. I agree. It's easy to point the blame at one coach rather than the players, you know, especially at times. And, you know, like on the flip side of that, with how great pitching has been, you have to wonder, like, if Chris Hook's going to be getting any interest from anyone else to go anywhere else. Obviously, like, when we lost Derek Johnson a couple of years ago, we were devastated because, we thought he was a great pitching coach, and he was the reason we were doing so well. And everyone's a little skeptical of Chris Hook, but nobody seems to be giving him love for how well his starting rotation and bullpen, for that matter, has been doing this year.
Yeah, I think he and Steve Carce have just been kind of the unsung heroes. I mean, everyone lauds Council and Stearns for roster construction and the lineup turning out, but they're just Hook and Carce have created helped lead one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. And I really think that they deserve a lot of credit. I think the people And I think that a pitching development staff in the minor leagues deserve lots of credit. And I think the pitching lab in Arizona deserves a lot of credit, too, even though it's kind of like Area 51. We know it's there. We don't know what's in it, though.
That is very true about the pitching lab. And I think that's a very roundabout answer to say this is a very greatly run organization. It takes, you know, a lot of moving pieces to make that happen. But, you know, from an individual standpoint, Corbin Burnes had a historic night on Wednesday. Obviously tied an MLB record with 10 consecutive strikeouts. And then he set a franchise record for 15 strikeouts without allowing a walk in a game, past Giovanni Gallardo at 14 to do that. So, man, what did you think of that performance from Burnes?
He was dominant. I mean, there was nothing that he could have done better. The hits he gave up were mainly like weaker bloopers. It wasn't like he was getting rocked, but he was, I mean, he did everything that he needed to, and he had command over every pitch he threw. Every pitch seemed like it was thrown with a purpose. He wanted it to be, and it was something to watch.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can look at one things like we jumped off to a 7-0 lead, so like, oh, it's easy, just go out there, throw strikes, which he obviously did, because I don't think he got into a 2-ball count until the 4th inning of that game, which is crazy enough in itself. But he also was still locating well. I mean, he was using the curveball a lot, a couple strikeout, I think one strikeout off the changeup, and generated over 30 whiffs in that game. Like, that is the definition of untouchable.
And that's a lineup without Javi Baez giving you 3 strikeouts. I know Jack Stern pulled a graph, and it showed that the teams have finally realized that if you throw Baez pitches out of the zone, he's still going to swing at them.
Yeah, that is true. Javi Baez is just super ultra aggressive. That actually got me thinking, you know, on the opposite side of that is Christian Yelich, who, like, if you throw him a pitch out of the zone, he's not going to swing. And he's not not crushing balls as much as he used to in the zone, because he's only got 6 home runs on the year. And we saw him bat leadoff in one of these games over the series. Obviously, it was when Colton Wong, who's out, who has by far been a phenomenal leadoff hitter all year. So, like, if it's broke, why change? Or if it's not broke, why change it? But what are your thoughts in the argument for, you know, is there a case to be made for Christian Yelich at least temporarily playing a little bit more at leadoff?
I think there is a case. I mean, I think that, I know if you go to Twitter, Facebook, you'll see people saying, oh, dump him 7th or 8th in the lineup. But I think leadoff makes, and he is drawing walks, he's getting on base. And plus, I mean, the leadoff hitter is the way to get the most at-bats in the game. And at this point with Yelich, it seems like he needs to see pitches, get as much exposure as he can to live pitch walk, and at almost 18% clip. So it's not like he's going in there and whiffing, which he does do, but on base of 372, I think it does make sense to keep him in the lineup to bat him leadoff, at least until he finds his stroke again.
Yeah, for me, I think, like, if I wanted Christian Yelich to bat leadoff more, it'd just be more so he became more aggressive, because he's just taking so many more pitches than he had in years past, which obviously correlates with the increased walk. But first pitch strikes, he's not capitalizing on that whatsoever. Last year he was terrible at 13.4%, and then this year he's at 21. In his, you know, what should have been back-to-back MVP years, he was at nearly 30% of the time he was swinging at that first pitch. So, like, mm-hmm. If you have him go leadoff, get aggressive, you know, teams aren't going to be willing to walk him because he can wreak havoc on the base path. So get him out there. Let him be aggressive. I think if you could get him going and just kind of get his mojo back at leadoff hitter, then maybe slide him back down to that 3 spot after a while, I think it's worth a shot.
Yeah, I mean, anything to get him going, because if he can return to even half the MVP player he was, if he can get, you know, WRC plus, to right now it's 101. I mean, if you can get that up to 115, 120, you're looking at just a potent lineup. I mean, you have Wong, Adamas, Escobar, Urias, and coming off the bench, and then you got Ed Yelich to that mix, and Narvaez too. That'll play.
That'll play, and it would be a big boost for a playoff team. That is for dang sure. Well, yeah. We made it this far into the podcast, and we only mentioned Luis Urias's name once. I know you are just amped up about his performance today. So what do you got about Luis Urias?
Look, he's good. I mean, he's doing everything he needs to do, except on defense, he is making throwing errors. I'll concede that. But, you know, he came into the year, won the starting shortstop job, lost it, but rebounded really well, kind of thrived once Adames came over. Starting third baseman with Shaw down, lost that job when Escobar came over. He's still contributing off the bench. I mean, 16 home runs. He's second or third, I guess, in the lead on the team behind Garcia and Adames, which try explaining that one to someone in March. But 1.8 F4, so Fangraphs. He's slashing 342, 453 with a 249 batting average, which, I mean, 113 WRC plus. He's closing that, we talked about it a little earlier, closing the gap between Grisham and Urias on kind of the who won the trade scale. And he has been the third best off the, like, for, among the Brewers behind Narvaez and Adames when looking at WRC plus. So he's just been, you know, he stepped up. He totally changed his stance this offseason, and it's paying off, man. He's putting himself in a position to have a long future with this.
Yeah, if you would have told me in the beginning of the year that Luis Urias had the chance to be at least in the 20 home run club, I think that should happen. And, you know, if he would get more consistent playing time throughout the rest of the season, he could maybe push for 25. I don't think he's going to get to 30. That would take, obviously, an incredible stretch. But 20 is definitely doable. 25, maybe. I guess we'll see. I mean, we used my most favorable lineup in the finale against the Cubs, where Escobar was at first and Urias is at third. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's the way to go.
Escobar's shown that, you know, the footwork is something that's a little that he still has to grow to. But honestly, I think that's the way to go, especially when you're facing left on the mound or guys. I mean, Tellez obviously with kind of a tweaked knee, but it's, I think, definitely getting Escobar and Urias in the lineup is great. Yeah, I mean, Urias, he's OPS in 795 right now. I did write an article back in, I think, March saying he could OPS 800. So, you know, if you can get that extra 5 points, that'd be great. Then I can prove I was right and, you know, start the chain of events that leads me to taking over for David Stearns one day.
There you go. I'm sure in your preseason article, did you also predict that he would fall one total base short of tying Ryan Braun's club record of 15? Because he was one short against the Cubs. One short. And he had, all five of his hits were for extra bases. That's just crazy.
He's first 16th player in baseball history to do that. First player in franchise history.
Jeez.
I mean, granted, one of the home runs did come off of a position player, but, you know.
Still counts.
Yeah, counts the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, also this series, we saw lots of crazy stuff happen. Like, Colton Wong hit two doubles in the first inning. That was the first time since that's happened since, like, Lorenzo Cain's rookie year in 2010. We had 8 hits in the first inning when we scored 7 runs. That was the first time since, like, 1982 that's happened. And then you can go all the way back even further, like Corbin Burnes obviously tying the strikeout record for 10 in a row. That goes back to 1970, or Aaron Nola did it earlier this year, I guess. But
yeah, the record stands for 50 years. A month and a half later, two guys do it. But this is a great series to go in, use like StatHead by Baseball Reference, just looking at all the fun stuff, like nuggets you can dig out of there. Like now the Brewers had the longest winning streak in franchise history at Wrigley Field with 6 games. First 4-game sweep ever against the Cubs. But it's crazy what the team was able to do this series.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though it's against, obviously, a lesser beaten down Cubs team, you still got to go out there and play every day, and you cannot take any of that away from the players. The last thing about Corbin Burns, do you think that this performance that he gave is kind of what's going to help separate him maybe from the Cy Young voting? Obviously, DeGrom's been injured. He's got two other Brewers who are capable of getting votes. And then it's who, what, like Kevin Gausman and Walker Buehler seem to be like the other likely candidates. But Corbin Burns seems to be setting the most records.
Right now, you have Zach Wheeler is the leader in pitching war. But it's Corbin Burns right behind him. Then Woodruff and Peralta also pretty dang close too. What I'm mentally preparing myself for is the Brewers with Peralta, Woodruff, and Burns. They're going to split the votes, one like the first through fourth place votes. And we're going to have just the mega upset. Zach Wheeler's going to get in with like three first place votes, like 12 or like 12 second place and one third place. And I don't know if I'm just mentally preparing myself for that. But I think Burns definitely pushing for the Cy Young Award.
Yeah, it certainly is going to be a good mess, like, because lots of Brewers should be getting votes. But it's also like, man, we need someone to like, we need a clear favorite. That way we know a Brewer's going to get it. It's an interesting dilemma to be in.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking with my brother about this earlier today. Like, I legitimately think whichever Brewer starter starts the last game of the season is going to get the most votes, just yeah. Recency bias. I mean, like, at that point, you know, you look through all the major categories, they're all in the top five. I mean, whip, you're looking at strikeouts, ERA, they're all Lance Lynn qualified with the Field of Dreams game, but before that, Woodruff was the lead. I think Woodruff was the leader.
Yep, he was.
For a couple hours.
Yeah, so certainly should make for an interesting finish to the season. And I mean, this is with a six-man rotation, too. Like, these guys are maybe not starting as often as some of those other guys, but they're still working deep into games, and, you know, they're still finding enough innings to qualify, which I think Corbin Burns just barely got in through the qualified numbers with that eight-inning performance here. But he also missed, you know, a couple starts through the COVID IL early this year, so that played a factor as well.
Yeah, I mean, Council has done a great job of stretching out the rotation. I know I saw that this is only the Woodruff's second start on kind of the four-day rest, so every fifth game. They've been really good about, you know, utilizing the days off and shaping the rotation to prepare for the stretch run, because all three of those pitchers are at career highs for innings right now, and we still got hopefully two and a half months of baseball left.
Yeah, right. We definitely do not want them to lose any steam leading into the postseason. I agree with that 100%. Craig Council is going to have to do a little bit more kind of shuffling or maningling around with the bullpen here now, because for the second time in back-to-back weeks, we've lost another pitcher with an elbow injury. This time it's John Curtis, who we obviously just acquired at the trade deadline, giving up Peyton Henry for. But then in the continual game of you get some back and then you lose some, we got Justin Topa back. So unfortunate news followed by maybe some exciting news. So what do you got about those two guys?
The Curtis injury sucks. I mean, he's going to be out for all of next season too at this point, which is unfortunate. But Topa coming back is a huge addition. I think that he could go down as one of the biggest mid-season acquisitions, just because he's great. Like, the Brewers are able to take pitchers with great stuff and develop them into a way to maximize that, and Topa and Cousins are just another example of that. And I'm very excited to have him fortifying the bullpen.
Yeah, me too. And, like, obviously, Topa made, his MLB debut at 29 years old last year. He was less than 10 innings pitched or something like that. But obviously, it was enough to impress us that going into the season, we thought he was going to play a big role. Had to rehab the elbow most of the year. And then watching the highlights from today's game, obviously, I love his slider, but then watching his two-seam fastball, just the run on that thing, how it dives into right-handed batters, I was like, Jesus, he's going to bust some knuckles with that pitch. I could not believe how well that pitch was moving. That's going to be a difference maker for him.
Yeah, if he hasn't made his pitching ninja debut yet, it's going to happen once once Friedman gets through the highlights of today, because it was nasty.
Yeah, it certainly is. And that guy, he knows how to dial it up too. I guess I didn't see exactly what was he hitting on the radar gun today, like 96, 97 most of the time?
Yeah, I think it was consistently, he was consistently hitting 96. He might have topped out a little higher than that, but I know for the most part it was upper 90s still.
Yeah, jeez. I mean, that's two good bullpen pitchers, and thinking like Topa and Cousins, you think about devastating pitchers with high velocity and great sliders. I mean, they're, you know, I don't want to say mirror image because they're not, but it's weird. We think these two unproven guys are going to be like so great in our bullpen, and then we still have Hader and Williams as well too. So I think the bullpen, you know, despite how much we're losing, like obviously with Curtis, obviously that kind of sucks, but we also have these great pieces that I think, you know, maybe other teams don't have as much of a look at, or a little more unfamiliar with. And that's kind of like the vibes of like 2018, like when Burns and Woodruff were in the bullpen and in the postseason making impact moments, is like people just didn't have a lot of film on them. And I think that can kind of play to our advantage.
Yeah, I think it can. I mean, obviously these players, I mean, they talk with guys around the league. Like I'm sure they're friendly with guys on the Mets or Dodgers or whoever we'll face in the playoffs, but there's something to be said about facing a guy for the first time in the playoffs. And I believe that Peralta hasn't faced the Dodgers ever in his career. I'll have to double check that, but I believe that, I mean, it's limited exposure to guys, to teams out in the West. And I think even that, I mean, with all the footage you have, there's something that you can't, I mean, there's something about facing Burns and Woodruff that obviously teams haven't been able to pick up on just by watching the tape.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the bullpen might not even matter if they just go 8 innings right off the bat. So
the 2019 national strategy.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. Well, I think before my voice goes completely shot here, that is going to wrap us up here for today. Obviously, lots of historic stuff that we recapped here. And, you know, there's all sorts of writing and probably even more stats we missed. That was just how crazy of a series it was. So thanks for joining me here again, Josh. And we'll be back next time, probably after the Pirate series then.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You can always, as always, follow me on Twitter at Josh Waldock. And, you know, I'm going to do a little giveaway. First person to DM me the word pumpernickel on Twitter, I'll send them a Topps Chrome Urias rookie card. So cool. DM me pumpernickel, and I'll get it out to you pretty soon.
All right, I just sent you a DM. I win. Just kidding. The contest is still open, so make sure you do that. That card will be worth, you know, your retirement someday.
Oh, yeah. It'll be like the top five cards of all time, like Hannes Wagner, Mickey Mantle, and then the Urias.
Perfect. All right. Well, we'll talk to you later then.
Yeah, have a good one.